In the beginning, that era was dominated by the shadow of a man no longer there, Franklin D. Roosevelt. He had died in 1945, but his impact on American politics was so profound that even the most powerful Republican leaders believed privately that their party might be permanently in the minority. Roosevelt had been cast forth in the midst of two transcending events, the Great Depression and World War II. The first was responsible for a massive reordering of the American economy and society, thereby creating a huge new base for the Democrats. The second permitted Roosevelt to emerge as an international leader in a time of great crisis and to prolong his presidency for two additional terms. During that time, the infrastructure of the Democratic Party became ever more powerful, and Roosevelt was able to extend his reach into the courts. Roosevelt was the ultimate modern politician, the first great master of modern mass communications in a democracy. For millions of poorer Americans, and for the new immigrants and their children, his ability to exploit radio and make it seem his personal vehicle had a particular resonance. To them, Roosevelt was not only president for life, he was their guide to the rights of American politics. The effect of this on the Republican Party, mired as it was in political attitudes that predated the Depression, World War II, and the coming of radio, was devastating. In July 1949, some 9 months after his own shocking defeat by Harry Truman, which seemed to promise the Roosevelt coalition would go on ad infinitum, Thomas E. Dewey met with Dwight Eisenhower, then the president of Columbia University, to begin the process of coercing Ike to run for the presidency in 1952 as a Republican. Eisenhower's notes of that meeting are unusually revealing of the Republican dilemma. "All middle-class citizens of education have a common belief that the tendencies towards centralization and paternalism must be halted and reversed. No one who voices these opinions can be elected." He, Dewey, quotes efforts of Hoover, Landon, Wilkie, himself. "Consequently, we must look around for someone of great popularity and who has not frittered away his political assets by taking positive stands against national planning, etc., etc. Elect such a man to presidency, after which he must lead us back to safe channels and paths." In effect, Dewey was saying that the solid citizens who could make the right decisions for the future of the country had, because of the New Deal, become a minority, and that the nation had fallen into the clutches of dark and alien forces. Not surprisingly, the Republican Party was traumatized and bitterly divided. Certainly, the Democratic Party was divided as well, between the liberal Northern Urban Coalition and the Southern Conservative Jim Crow wing. But for all their differences, the Democrats had a certain glue. They won, and in victory there was patronage and power, a combination that transcended ideology. For the Republicans, there was only the taste of ashes. They had been out of office since 1932. The shadow of the Depression still hung over them, and the Democrats were still running against Herbert Hoover, portraying the Republicans as the party of cold, uncaring bankers. Were the Republicans forever to be trapped by those events, then 20 years in the past? Of the divisions within the Republican Party, the most obvious was a historic regional one. On one side were the lawyers and bankers of Wall Street and State Street, their colleagues through the great eastern industrial cities, and those in the powerful national media based in New York. They were internationalist by tradition and by instinct. They had fought against the New Deal in states where the power of labor was considerable, but had eventually come to accept certain premises of the New Deal. By contrast, the Republicans of the Heartland were essentially unchanged by the great events that had overtaken them. They were resentful of World War II and suspicious of how Roosevelt had gotten them into it. This was particularly true of the many German Americans in the region. Instinctively Anglophobic, they were wary of our growing involvement in Western Europe and our close alliance with the British. If they had a Bible other than the Bible, it was the conservative, isolationist Chicago Tribune of Colonel Robert R. McCormick. They were anxious to get back to the simple, comfortable world of the 20s, before the New Deal had empowered labor unions, before air travel had shrunk the Atlantic Ocean into a pond, and before scientists had ever thought about developing intercontinental ballistic missiles to catapult atomic warheads into their midst.